This is a SydneyAnglicans.net podcast.
This is Jeremy Halcrow, Managing Editor of Southern Cross, and today I'm investigating Total Church. This is the idea of mission through community, as pioneered by The Crowded House, a church planting network in Sheffield in South Yorkshire, and Loughborough in Leicestershire in England. And with me today is Shane Rogerson, who is the minister at St Peter's Crooks River, and has organised a conference on Total Church, sponsored by the Anglican churches in South Sydney region, and also Stuart Crawshaw, who has been leading Soul Revival, a mission community amongst the young people of Gymnie Anglican Church for many years now. Have I got your introductions right?
That's right. Order.
Thanks, Shane. Now, you've invited Steve Timmis from Crowded House to Sydney in April next month. Why are you so excited and interesting about the Total Church concept?
Well, my particular context is I've moved to South Sydney region where there's not a lot of strength in Bible-based fellowships. It's hard work doing mission in our part of the world. And so part of coming as one of the leading pastors at the church there was to actually work out what models are around that are actually engaging missionally in a kind of post-Christian urban setting. And so as you start to look around, there are the predominant kind of models of church that are running in Sydney, but I was thinking, are there other ways that we can reach areas like where I live, which are heavily green and gay? There's more dogs than kids. Church is just anathema to most people, and that's where I came across the kind of stuff that they're doing in Sheffield, and I thought that might have some legs on it.
But you wouldn't really describe Total Church as one model, is it? It's not a one-size-fits-all kind of concept.
Well, no, it's a heavily theologically driven movement. So it's not just sort of trying to sell a program or a package, you know, and add water and, you know, you'll have a church of 1,000 or whatever. But what they're trying to do is consider what it actually means for the gospel to shape the whole of life, and what it means for the gospel to shape the whole of life in the fellowship of God's people. And out of that, because the gospel is both the word to be believed and proclaimed, how you then be a gospel people in community going about doing mission. And so it's great, it's theologically stimulating to think about going back to sort of principles of what it means for us to be God's people, what it means for us to be people who love Jesus and leave sin and learn from the word and live for his glory in the world, particularly in the context in which we live. And then what it means for us to be Jesus people who belong to each other and therefore go about doing mission with each other. And out of that, you kind of learn from their experience, which is very much a working model, so it's very messy. It's not a kind of one-size-fits-all. It's actually very hybrid in the way they piece it together. So, yeah, it's kind of attractive because it's mission in the messiness of post-Christian urban living. That's what I like about it.
Now, you said it's different to what you've seen around you in Sydney. How is it different?
Well, I think this is not criticising the models that we presently have, but a lot of what we do is aimed at seeing people converted and then kept in church, in fellowship. So we basically have an outreach and in-drag model of church. It's often focused around a property and a building, a Sunday meeting, all good things. The gathering of God's people around his word for encouragement and fellowship and proclamation and worship, and a great thing, but I don't think many people would argue that as much as we work really hard on that model, we're just seeing less and less people who are prepared to cross the church door. And so that forces us to think about how we're actually going to connect with the community, which is, I think, a wonderful invitation of the Archbishop of Sydney to actually say, you know, think creatively about how you want to connect with the community. And I think if we're going to be serious about connecting with the community, we can't just look for the next silver bullet. within our present paradigms, we actually have to say, well, are there other paradigms of doing church and being church that will actually help us to connect better? And so one of the great things about I like about what Timmis and Chester are saying is that they don't want to just sort of convert and keep people, but they want to train and send people. And it's a very mission-orientated apostolic model of church planting, which is I think really refreshing.
I think you're right that they're real echoes of Connect 09 in this concept. And I was reading Rory Shiner's blog, which he pointed me to, Shane, where he points out that Steve Timmis suggests that we should develop relationships with gospel intentionality, and this offers a way of evangelism that's somewhere between strange evangelism and personal evangelism.
Yep.
And because both of those have become problematic for sort of Christians in a sort of post-Christian kind of context. Do you agree with that assessment?
Well, I think one of the things is that part of the language of our church culture is that we call the minister the particularly trained person who stands up in front of us on Sunday and preaches the word, which is a very vital aspect of leadership within our churches. We need well-trained pastors, teachers, evangelists, church planters, elders, overseers who will help us to be God's people and equip us to be God's people. One of the things about what Chester and Timmis, they want to emphasise is that we are all servants of the gospel. And it's not just giving special minister language. Minister just means servant. And so we're all servants of the gospel. And in a sense, we're all sent by Jesus. We're called out of the world to be his holy people, but sent into the world as salt and light people. And so one of the things they're really big on emphasising is that we don't just pray for our link missionary who we send to the Northern Territory or the family that goes to Tanzania, but we need to actually be praying for our school teachers who go off and are missionaries 40 hours a week in the schools. And so the whole of life is the sphere in which God's glory is made known. And it actually adds, it's not abolishing the clergy, but it's promoting the laity and saying to people who might probably feel like everyday hack ordinary Christians that's where ministry happens, in the ordinary parts of life. And that's a really refreshing thing about this, that everyone is involved in mission, everyone is a missionary, we don't have to be like spiritual Rambos who kind of load up our belt and go out and try and hunt them down. And one of the things about Total Church is this idea of doing mission in community, just hanging out with people, keeping the gospel central to what we do. Proclamation doesn't get thrown away, but we complement each other in the way we go about loving people and loving each other and sharing the word in that context.
I guess one of the things we've been quite strong on in Sydney Diocese is seeing the church as a light which attracts people. And I like what you said about supporting Christians as they go out into the world. Yeah, that sort of image of the salt that goes in is dispersed. Dispersed out into the community. Do you see that as one of the paradigmic differences with Total Church as opposed to the traditional model?
Well, it's not unique to Total Church, because there's a whole movement. It's an ecclesiologically driven movement. It's a church-based movement that wants to see the church engaging with the world. And salt and light is all about power and proximity. There's no use having this powerful substance that transforms things if it's actually not engaging and touching and being where darkness and corruption is. And so, when Jesus tells his disciples in Matthew 5, 13 to 16, you are the salt of the earth, you are the light of the world, he's actually saying you are the new Israel. You're to do what God's people did. But Israel had sort of expected all the nations to come to them. But the radical thing about what Jesus teaches in the kingdom is that he's on the mountain when he says you are salt and light, And at the end of Matthew's gospel, they're back on the mountain. And what does he say? Go. He sends them. He sends them out to actually be salt and light, to take the presence of God, the power of God, the transforming nature of the gospel to the world. And so it's not a new idea, but it's something that we have to work out. How do we actually be salt and light people where there's corruption and darkness? And sometimes I think when we sit in church on a Sunday morning and we hear great preaching and there's wonderful fellowship and people serving each other and all these fantastic things, but what we need to realise is we actually might be sticking the light under a bowl, because there's no people in darkness or corruption there. And so we need to take church to where people actually are. And one of the wonderful things about this model is it actually says, let's go and hang out where people who need salt and light are, and love them and speak about Jesus and be full on for God in that context. And you know, so they give examples of hanging out in Kurdish restaurants called USA Chicken. It's great. It's awesome.
Stuart, this idea that Sharon's talking about sort of hanging out in genuine Christian community, is something that Soul Revival has been on about probably right from the beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
But I understand that with the construction of your new Soli's house, that you're kind of entering a new era.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain how you've come to that point?
Yeah, sure. We started Soli's back in 1991, and we were in a situation where we were really struggling with just the sort of concepts that Shane was talking about. How do we actually see more unchurched teenagers in our area get to not only hear the proclamation of the gospel, but also see it lived out in the lives of Christians, so that they could really see that the Lord has made a massive difference to our lives. So we'd been playing around with a few traditional ways of doing youth ministry, and at the time I was at CBS, Campus Bible Study.
And we're talking about Philip the early Jensen. 90s.
Yeah, early 90s, yeah. With Philip Jensen. I was really excited about gathering around God's Word and then doing that on the university campus. At the time I was doing a PhD, and everybody in all my classes, because I was a tutor there, all my classes knew about CBS because there was such a presence on the campus. And I remember thinking about the contrast that was to my schools in my shire, well, not my shire, but back in the shire. Sutherland Shire. But I grew up in Kirrawee High School, and basically our ICF, we all used to hide in a room every lunchtime and do our Christian thing, but it was sort of almost like, you know, what are the Christians doing over near the library kind of thing. So I remember we decided two things. We decided that, number one, that we as leaders would be more of a peer group than running a youth group, that we would actually invite the kids that we lead to grow up into our peer group in appropriate ways, that we would be their leaders and we'd teach them to read the Bible for themselves, but we'd also share life with them and invite them to be our friends as well. So that was a fairly Aussie way of seeing it. That's how we saw it. And then we thought, how do we, as that little peer group began to grow, we thought, how do we take that out into the community so people can see that? And so we thought of the school, and instead of meeting in our ICF in a room, we thought we'd start a new thing called the Chip Lunch, where we'd go out onto the grass in the playground where all the kids were, and they could just wander up to listen to what we were talking about. They could, even if they felt a bit threatened, to wander up and hang around the edges of the meeting. They could at least see us in the playground. And throw stuff at us if that's what they wanted to do, which sometimes happens. But we were really encouraged that not only did that raise the profile of the Christians in the school, but it also gave them confidence to actually stand up as Christians when they weren't at the meeting, and to have a strong Christian identity and to not be ashamed of Jesus, that they could actually... We almost gave them permission to talk about Jesus with their friends, because we were kind of modelling that to them. So the school ministry was one aspect of that. The other aspect was that instead of just meeting on the church property, we from the beginning wanted to meet in other locations as well, so that over the years we've met in garages, abandoned churches, we had a factory that we rented for a number of years, and recently we've done a development at Guymere, and there's a house next door to the church which has a good street front, and we're just down the road from the shopping centre. So we thought that if we decorate that up as our new venue and make that open from the front, and we're going to put glass on the front so people can see what we're doing inside as they go up and down Guymie Bay Road, then that'll be a new era for us in our venue. But yeah, the idea is to not be ashamed, to be passionate and excited, and to share our faith with our friends. Over the years, about 80% of Solis are from non-church backgrounds. So we do have a lot of people that have become Christians, and then because we have such a strong focus on gathering around God's word and discipleship, we've seen a lot of those people hang around at our church because they've been excited to be a part of something. And that's something that I really resonate with what Tim's talking about. It seems he has some pretty similar kind of ideas in that regard.
Certainly Tim and Steve in Total Church talk about seeing church as an identity rather than a responsibility.
Mm.
And that's something that I think has been fundamental to Soul Revival right from pretty much the beginning. Can you say a little bit more about how that's impacted the lives of young people at Guymie in practice?
Yeah, we have, as I said before, as we're trying to be a peer group, we've invited other people to share their lives with us as we share our lives with each other. So we consider that we want to give people an opportunity to opt into that kind of a lifestyle, and also opt out of it if they feel like they want to opt out of it. We have a lot of people that go to our youth ministry and then opt out of the lifestyle in Soul Revival but still stay in our church, and also others who opt out of being a part of this particular part of the church and go on to other churches. So Jenny Redmond, for example, from Soul Revival, ended up going to Bible College, and then she's gone out to Western Sydney, out to Mount Druitt. So we think that the personal freedom and the individual choice is very important, but we also want to encourage a little bit more interdependence with each other so that we're not just consuming church and we're not just coming to church for what it does for us individually, but we're actually coming as servants and we're serving Jesus and serving one another. We really love it when we read so many areas in the New Testament that we get encouraged to be having a strong relationship with one another. Romans 12 is one of my favourites, that love should be sincere. There's challenges for us to have equal concern for one another, not just go to church and choose a small group within a church of people who are just like us, but to actually have concern for everyone and be willing to embrace others who are different to ourselves. We've also felt that having strong accountability in that kind of a community is really important. So even though we're trying to be committed to each other as we serve Jesus together and do what Jesus says when he says, love one another as I have loved you, so by this the world will know that you are my disciples. We try and do that. But we also want to have equal concern for others that aren't in our community, so we have accountability. And so we're always on show. We're always open and letting people see how we minister. And so we proactively seek relationships with our elders in our church, those that are in their 70s and 80s, and ask them to come along and share with us what they think following Jesus is all about at their stage of life. We also have elders from, the wider Anglican church that Bible teachers that we're encouraged by. We invite them to speak into our community so that we can be open and creative too. And one other thing I'd say is too, we like to try and be mobile as a community. So because we are connected with each other, we do want to be connected with other churches. And so that's where ideas like the treehouse has come from with Soul Revival, that we're seeking to be friends with other churches, and particularly other churches in areas that don't have the resources we have in the Sutherland Shire. So the stereotype of us in the Sutherland Shire is that we hide behind our bridges and we kind of just stay in the Shire, but we've got really good friends out in Western New South Wales with Aboriginal communities in Bawarrina and Collianabri and Gilgandra, and we really think that that's really important for us to stand by our brothers and sisters in places where poverty is quite extreme in a lot of cases, and go into those communities and stand under the leadership of biblical Christians who are Aboriginal people who and start to be friends with them. So we have a thing called the friendship visits. So instead of going on mission to Brawarrina, there's already churches there, so we go as friends with them and minister together with them. So there's some of the ways we do that.
Now, in Total Church, they talk a little bit about the importance of living in proximity. How important is that being in the soul revival model?
We've tried to find a space where we can get together for a bit more than an hour a week. We were encouraged years ago by Dudley Ford that when Christians have spent about 5 years together, then they actually get to know each other pretty well. And I remember doing my research at the time when I was talking to Dudley, again this was in the early 90s, and finding out that on average people move house every 5 years in Sydney. And it started to occur to me that maybe we might want to try and not stop transients, but maybe try and reduce it a little, that we might be able to have a bit more proximity with each other during each week, but also over a number of years. That again was an easy thing to opt into or opt out of for people. But we've found a lot of fruit from that, that we've really got to know each other. Going to church for an hour, we felt like we were mostly relating symbolically to each other through what was happening in the liturgy on a Sunday night, and the liturgy was great and we continued to be supportive of that and go to our Sunday evening service. But we created a space on a Saturday night, which was a social time where we could hang out with each other around God's Word. We always open God's Word. We'd hang out for a longer period of time. So we actually get to put into practice the one another passages of Scripture more by sitting with each other, sharing each other's lives, and not just a group of people who are going to tell us what we want to hear, but people who might actually speak into our lives and even challenge some of the things that we were doing from a different perspective. So we have a fairly heterogeneous group that meets together on a Saturday night. That's just the time we do it. I don't think it has to be a Saturday night, but we've been living like that for 15 years now, my wife and I and my family, and our boys are being brought up into a community where they know other adults, they know teenagers, they know other children, and I think that's really good for my boys, and I'm really excited that they can grow up in that kind of space.
Now, Gomi is a fairly upmarket area, and you've got young people growing up and getting married. How do they afford to stick around?
Yeah, well, some people move on. We've had people move to the Central Coast and move down to Southern Highlands, for example. But for what we're hoping to do is continue to send out from our church, but also to keep the base strong so that generations of young people growing up will have a good Christian witness. There's the local primary school is one of the biggest primary schools in the state, and our high school is also a really big high school with over 1,000 teenagers in Kirrawee and about 700 at Guimi High. So there's heaps and heaps of people who live in the area. A lot of people live in units in the area as well if they can't afford houses. But we are thinking through things like how we can help each other more practically. If there are people who feel called to stay in the Shire to help keep the base strong as we send out people, then we want to help people to do that. Recently, my wife and I have been working on a housing project where we've got plans that have been passed by council that we're building a house for ourselves and our mum and dad, who are also going into this initiative with us. And we're also building a second house that has 4 two-bedroom units attached to it. And the idea of that is that if we can afford to build it, and we're still talking with builders at the moment, so we appreciate your prayer for us that we can get this off the ground. Mm-hmm. The idea is that people can come and live with us for free for 2 years in one of those two-bedroom units and save up enough money for a deposit of a unit of their own, and then they can stay in the church and stay in the community. Now, we're still, you know, working on that project, but and that's not the only answer, but I suppose what it's caused us to do is to think, how can we think creatively? We've had another, there's 2 young couples at our church that bought a house together, and they split the house in two, and they live in that house. One couple live upstairs with a separate entrance, and one couple live downstairs with a separate entrance. So to all intensive purposes, it's like a villa, but they're able to do that a bit more cheaply. So there are creative ways that we can find to help us to stay in the area, but we have to reduce our expectations materially. A lot of our young people that are growing up into Soul Revival, like we've been going for 15 years now, but we've got some people in their 30s right down to teenagers now in the community. The ones that are getting older are making conscious decisions. If they stay in the Shire, they're not going to have all the things that everyone else in the Shire have, because to stay in the Shire, they can't afford all those things. And because we spend a little bit more time ministering together too, we do make decisions about restricting some of the...
like maybe career options?
Well, my wife, for example, is a HR manager, and of her own choice, she decided not to to really extend her career, and she's been quite happy to work in a Kirrawee factory for a number of years, and that curtailed her career, but she was able to do a bit more in ministry and run a girls' Bible study every week because she didn't have to commute in from the city. Little things like that. So, yeah, I think that's exciting to not just give into secularism, but to actually say, well, we don't just have to survive as Christians, we can actually thrive as Christians, and we could even have an influence on others who aren't, as they look at us. And you know, we have a high value of family, for example, which again, I think, you know, the total church model has, which is saying, you know, families. I talk to guys my age who are lamenting the fact that they spend such long hours at work and don't get to see their kids.
Yeah.
And to say to them they have a choice to actually spend more time with their family as a godly leader of their household, and you know, have time where they can, you know, be doing Bible study with their kids, and just little things like that keep just opening up ideas for people to think about.
Seeing the gospel reshape the whole of life, not just kind of this kind of privatized sort of belief, mm. but it's actually the implications of the gospel right down to how long you spend at work and the type of house you live in and how you actually make time to serve people, and that's one of the wonderful things about it. And it's helping each other to make those decisions and model those decisions to each other. Oh, that's really exciting.
And that's where the identity comes in. You know, you do get a sense together that we can be countercultural and not necessarily buy everything that we're told by our bosses or by the media or by the TV. So it's kind of liberating.
Sure, you were saying before that you want to be in dialogue, if you like, with the guys from Total Church. Do you think there's anything that you could offer that model? Like, are there points of departure because we're in an Australian context?
I think as Steve and I started talking with each other last year, and I was very excited to start investigating his ideas, and then as I read his book, I was excited to dialogue with his book. And it seems to me that Steve has the same approach that I do, which is I really enjoy talking with other Christians about common problems that we face and thinking theologically about that and thinking biblically about it. And it's great having Steve as an evangelical brother who loves the gospel and wants to be theologically conservative and have look at different approaches to reaching out in mission to people in England. And I do see points of resonance. For example, when Steve's community goes to the local restaurant together, and you know, we do that at school, but we also do that on a Saturday night. We'll book out a whole Chinese restaurant and all go together. Now, that may be a similarity. Differences, I think, maybe because we've come from an Australian background, there may be some cultural things that might be slightly different. I think people in Sheffield hang out on Friday nights, and in Sydney we hang out on a Saturday night. Be interesting to see why we've come up with those two choices, and it'd be interesting to dialogue. So I'm actually looking forward to the conference because there are things that I want to investigate and explore with him in that regard. I think if I lived in Sheffield, I'd probably meet on a Friday night too, because my favourite team is Sheffield Wednesday. So I think I'd be down at the football at Hillsborough every weekend on Saturdays. But I think that I'm looking forward to this conversation developing in Sydney. I'm really enjoying the fact that we can have this conversation in such a strong, grounded, reformed tradition. And we've got, it seems like, a friend in England who's really keen to explore these things with us, with the same reformed theology, and I feel very comfortable with that, because I think that there might, as we converse on things, there might be things that come up that are different, and we might be able to discover that together as we talk about it.
Mm. So what are you hoping from the conference, Sean?
I think it's a bit a great opportunity to actually hear from Steve himself. He's a great Bible teacher. He's a man who he's you could get the impression that he's not interested in preaching, that he just wants Christians to hang out and kind of be Christian together, but he's a guy who actually is fundamentally committed to a faithful proclamation of the gospel. And everything, all my interactions with him, he's a guy who really, really wants us to be thinking faithfully about how we might let the gospel shape everything. So he's a great Bible teacher. I'm looking forward to his Bible teaching. I'm looking forward to being able to actually throw a whole heap of questions at him, because he is in a different context, although it is the UK, and there are heaps of similarities. There are some things that are, you know, will be different. I often think, you know, I'm the director of an established parish model. So, you know, how do you sort of create a model that where you have an existing congregation that is a, you know, it could be going fairly well. Our church is not, you know, disastrous. It's actually going quite well. But how do you transition into other models? That's a question I'd love to be able to ask him. And there'll be, he's good at sort of being able to answer those questions and throw those ideas around. And I think I keep coming across people who are really keen to think not only faithfully but creatively about how we connect with community. And this is just another one of those opportunities for that conversation. And hopefully it'll go well beyond. And so often we look outside to other models, and people get really enthusiastic about mission. So the emerging church movement is a bunch of people who are not quite happy with the evangelicalism. It's a bit of a protest movement, and so they're looking around, they're looking for ideas, but it's not a strongly theologically driven movement, and so they go and they drink from the emerging toilet. They get all these kind of infected ideas sort of thrown in with this sort of great heart for connecting with people in mission, and they end up not being faithful to the gospel. They end up enmeshing with the culture rather than engaging with the culture. Yet here's a guy who he really wants to theologically drive his ideas of church into the mission field in terms of church planting, in terms of how they live out the gospel in community together. I also want to really work through with him. He talks a lot about church, the people of God, and having a strong identity of the people of God. And that resonates with me so much when I read the scriptures. But I still want to sort of struggle with the whole idea of what it means for God's people to come together as the gathering of God's people. And what do we totally abandon church as an event? Or is there, you know, what place is there still for the gathering of God's people, particularly to hear the word of God, to encourage each other in that setting, and then continue to be church and share the identity as God's people 24/7. So I think there's heaps of scope for that on the conference day itself.
Do you think the conference will also be an opportunity for like-minded people like yourself and Stuart to come together and actually nut through some of these issues? Because obviously Stuart has some experience with some of the questions that you're asking. Yep. That Steve might not. For example, Stuart's operating within an Anglican parish context.
Yeah.
Whereas Total Church is a network of house churches, so there is a kind of different structure there.
Yeah, I think, and one of the things that the issues that Stuart is working through is in terms of transitioning from what was a youth ministry into something that's much bigger than just a youth culture, because they're growing up together. So there's great things to be learning there, because you know, when we think about modes of mission, we often break down our churches into homogenous groupings. And you look at Total Church, and it seems to be a fairly heterogeneous model. You know, there doesn't seem to be much place for homogenous groupings. And so to work out the balance of, you know, is there any place for, you know, like people hanging out together and reaching like people, but then also being part of a more diverse, multi-ethnic, multi-generational kind of grouping.
Is that a particular issue in your context, being a fairly multicultural?
Well, sure. I mean, we're part of a church where and our area is multi-ethnic, multi-generational, multi-pierced, multi-tattooed, you name it, it's multi-everything. In fact, people cherish that kind of multiculturalism, and there's so many subcultures in the Marrickville Council region. So we actually want to be a church that has all these kind of multi-aspects to it. But at the same time, we have Seti, who's pioneering a Pacific Islander ministry. But what we're saying is we don't want the end of that ministry to be an ethnic church. We actually want to see these people expressing unity and diversity, not in their ethnicity, but in the gospel of Christ. And so that's a huge issue. But also, I was going to say, it's not just a house church movement. Although the home is one of the key sort of places that sort of shapes the ethos of their ministry, more significantly is they're saying it's about a genuine expression of community, which means that as you go about planting churches, the goal isn't to make some big mass of people, but it's to actually create more and more expressions of community where people can genuinely love Jesus, love each other, and engage in mission together. And so it's a dynamic of small, networked with the whole, not necessarily a house church per se.
So the language of house church is a bit unhelpful.
Yeah, I think sometimes people paint it into, you know, kind of a corner. So you think house church and you think, you know, kind of the ladies wearing hankies on their heads and kind of all kinds of unhelpful expressions which probably won't help us. But but it's about finding ways of really connecting together as God's people and sort of going about doing mission together as God's people. And I think we can be far more effective in having smaller churches that have good leadership, gospel teaching, absolutely central, but we can be much more flexible. We can get into culture a lot quicker than if we sort of wait till we've got 100 people to plant a church. It can be more mobile. And, you know, if 12 people plant a church and it falls over, then you just, you know, pick up next week and have a go at something else. And so there's a lot less infrastructure and institution invested into it. And I think that's one of the other challenges, I think, for the way we think about mission, is that if we're going to have a highly centralised and kind of institutionalised model of church, then our very structures and institutions will potentially choke creative initiative to actually go and reach people who we'd never reach. And one of the things about the total church concept that they're saying is that, you know, you don't have to be big to be faithful to the gospel and to be engaging in mission. So, you know, grab 6 people, start actually, you know, go and meet in a cafe, start reading the Bible and proclaiming Christ together and encouraging each other to be godly and love the people in the cafe, and you never know what will happen. And that's one of the beautiful things about it.
Do you think, you were saying this model is effective at engaging with the community. Can you explain why you think that's the case?
Well, one of the things is like you can just take 6 people and you can say, right, there's a cafe. You know, coffee drinkers, they always hang out in the same place. And so you think, right, we're going to just go and hang out where people hang out. And so you take your 6 people, 10 people, 20 people, whatever it is, and you just go and hang out there together. Or in our area, there's this huge park. It's just got this awesome flying fox, and parents love going there. And so what we realise is that's a really cool place for us to go and hang out. And so what we're saying is we grab people together and we actually... sorry, Stu's waving at me. You actually take people together and you go and hang out in the one place and then you meet people and build relationships, and you do it intentionally. You don't sort of just go and hang out for the, you know, because it's a cool flying fox. You go and hang out, and that's a place where you build relationships. You show those people what it means for you guys to be a Christian community together, and you share the gospel word, which I, you know, that's the way.
This is something you've seen in practice, isn't it? Amongst the particular school community.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's a great idea. I think parks are a natural place where people gather and hang out, and they often come back week after week and fly their kites, and their kids get to know each other, and they get to know each other, and there's soccer clubs, there's beaches, there's cafes, there's restaurants, all those places. And again, if people are gathering together and there's a group of Christians that are there, and those Christians are being intentional about going up and being friendly, and also, you know, obviously putting their relationships on show in a way too while they're out. I mean, we go and hang out in parks and things often and as well, and I think it's a great idea actually to go every week. That's a great idea, Shane.
Well, like the emerging church guys, they always talk about incarnational mission. It's the big buzzword, you know, as you pick up any book on church and mission, and they start talking about incarnational mission. Now, you know, I don't like that language because I don't think it's the language that of the Bible for what God's people should be doing. You know, Jesus came in the flesh, but we can't be Jesus because we're not God. You know, sure, God is in us. God's at work in us, and He's transforming us. But what we're saying is that it's just about being in the culture where people are at. I think you're identifying with people. That's what Paul did. You know, when he was with Greeks, he became a Greek. When he was in Rome, with Jews, he became a Jew. He actually went and hung out where people were and tried to understand them and build relationships with them and bring the gospel into that context. And so one of the things that we just need to encourage people, Christians, to do is to realise that, you know, we have a reason for the hope that we have. We have an apologetic, but it's not just a rational apologetic. It's not just sort of 6 points of an explanation about Jesus, but it's a relational apologetic as well. What we want to say is, You can actually see that God is at work and God is real, because here's a bunch of people who love each other, who are working at forgiving each other and putting up with each other when we fail, and we're embodying the gospel, which is what Ephesians is all about. It's, you know, you actually see the body of Christ, you see Jew and Gentile coming together, and you go, wow, look what God is doing. And the relationships of God's people themselves become part of our apologetic, part of our giving a reason for the hope we have. You say, look at what God's doing amongst us, and let us tell you about Jesus. And I think that's really powerful. And so, but to do that, you've got to go and hang out where people are. You know, there's no point, you know, hanging around in Stu's garage and never actually getting, you know, people who are the lost and the people who need salt and light. If, you know, otherwise, you know, we're just holding hands and singing Kumbaya, it's not going to help anyone, you know. So, yeah.
So, do you think, in the light of that, do you think Total Church might offer ministers who are struggling to think through the Connect 09 concept? You know, they're trying to bridge the gap between cold contact and community connection, not sure really how to do it. Does Total Church sort of offer an opportunity to explore that?
Yeah, well, look, there's always going to be some chumps who just want the silver bullet. They don't want to walk into, you know, the Christian Kmart and pick up the latest program, you know, and whack it in a video machine and think, well, you know, that'll do that. We've done Connect. But anyone who's honest knows that, like, you think about the Passion of Christ, you think about the amount of effort that went into that, the amount of theatre parties and, you know, kind of coffee nights and all the things that we're all part of. Great thing to do. We thought, man, all these people are going to come and they're going to see this top flick about Jesus, and then because of that, we're going to have all these great conversations, and this event is going to flood the church with people. But how many people are in your church as a result of all our activity that went into that? I'm not saying the activity is wrong, but I'm just wondering whether, you know, we don't need to just do it once. We need to grab people who love movies. You know, so in our area, it's the Dendy at Newtown. And so we're just going to go a bunch of people, and once a month we're always going to go watch a movie, hang out, enjoy the movie, talk about the movie, and try and integrate what we learn from the movie into our worldview, which is shaped by the gospel, and sit in the same cafe, you know, every time we do it, have a conversation, invite other people into that conversation. I just wonder whether it's a far more relationally effective way of going about doing mission. And it's not saying that people will be saved because of relationships. You know, because we're continually saying, no, the gospel's at the centre of these relationships. We're not saying, you know, just come and belong. But you can't separate believing the gospel from belonging to God's people. And I think sometimes we've unhealthily done that, maybe as a reaction to other Christian movements where it's all about belonging. You know, so coming up to World Catholic Youth Day, where, you know, to be Roman Catholic, you know, I come from my family's sort of Irish Catholic background, it's all about belonging to the family. And so, you know, Protestants react against that and say it's all about believing. But the reality is, when you come and you believe who Jesus is as the Christ, the Son of God, part of actually coming into fellowship with God is coming into the fellowship of his people. And so we can't separate those two. And so we need to show people not only what it means to believe who Jesus is, because he is the most awesome person to believe in, but we need to see that it's also awesome to belong to him. In belonging to him, you belong to his people. And we all know this, but to actually go and embody it, to actually do it, means that we just need to maybe shake up our present paradigms a little bit and say, well, let's just stop beating ourselves to death on the next event and maybe give a bit more energy to embodying what it means to be God's people with the gospel at the centre.
So if people are interested in coming along to the conference, how do they find out more info and how do they register?
Sure, you can find me on Facebook. That's one way. You can we're meeting at, it's going to be a conference, is at April the 8th at Moore College. Moore College has been very kind with us. It's a full day conference. It's pretty cheap. We're doing it for about $40, and we'll try and actually get some nice goodies.
What day of the week is the 8th?
It's a Tuesday, but it's worth taking a day off from work to come to. Well worth it. And if you want to find out more, you can always email me, shanerogerson@optusnet.com. Facebook me, Stewie, you can get him on Facebook as well. Or there'll be some, if you Google Total Church, there'll be something coming up in the next week or so.
Thanks, Shane. Appreciate your time. Thank you, Stuart.
Thank you.
All the best with Solly's house.
Yeah, no worries.
This podcast brought to you by SydneyAnglicans.net. For more podcasts, visit SydneyAnglicans.net/media.